large glossy green ferns and artfully arranged tree branches, creating a tableau of jungle vegetation, and there was a man on the floor. I thought I recognized the chamber. The man was curled up in a fetal position, naked, as if he had just been placed there and been allowed to wake. His skin was pallid and was covered in a sheen of sweat, like sugar glazing. Gradually he raised his head and opened his eyes, looking around, and tried slowly rising to his feet. Tried, and then stumbled into another permutation of the huddle in which he had begun. He could not stand because one of his legs ended in a clean, bloodless stump just below the ankle, like the sewn-up end of a sausage. He tried again, and this time managed to reach a wall, hopping to get there before balance deserted him. There was a look of inexpressible terror on his face. The man started shouting, and then his shouts became more frantic. I watched him shiver, and then something moved on the other side of the room, in a dark alcove situated in one of the white walls. Whatever it was moved slowly and silently, but the man was aware of its presence, and now his shouts became shrieks, like the squealing of a pig being slaughtered. The thing emerged from the alcove on the other side of the room, dropping in a bundle of dark coils, thick as a human thigh. It still moved languidly, hooded head rising to test the air, and yet more of it struggled from the alcove. By now the man's screams were punctuated by sharp silences as he drew breath, a contrast which only served to heighten the dread in the sounds he made. And I felt nothing except a kind of expectancy, my heart tight in my chest, as the hamadryad moved towards the man, and there was nowhere he could run to. I woke, sweating. A while later I hit the streets. I had slept for most of the afternoon, and while I did not exactly feel refreshed, my mind certainly was in a worse state of turmoil than it had been before. I was at least not so crippled with tiredness. I moved through lazy mulch traffic, pedestrians, rickshaws, steam and methane-driven contraptions, the occasional palanquin, volantor, or cable car passing through, though never lingering for very long. I noticed that I attracted less attention than when I had first entered the city. Unshaven, my eyes sunk into tired sockets, I was looking more like I belonged in the mulch. The late afternoon vendors were setting up stalls, some of them already hanging lanterns in preparation for the coming dusk. A misshapen maggot-like methane-filled dirigible navigated ponderously overhead, someone lashed to a gondola beneath it calling out slogans through a megaphone. Broken neon images flickered over a projection screen hanging beneath the gondola. I heard what sounded like a muezzin call across the mulch, calling the faithful to prayer, or whatever observance they practiced here. And then I saw a man with pendulous jewel-studded ears, whose mobile stall was hung with small wicker baskets holding snakes of every size and color imaginable. When I watched him open a cage and prod one of the darker snakes, its coils shifting uneasily, I thought of the ceramic white room in my dream, which I now recognized as the pit where Kaweya kept the juvenile, and shivered, and wondered what any of it meant. Later, I bought a gun. Unlike the weapon I had stolen from Zebra, and then pawned, it was neither cumbersome nor conspicuous. It was a small pistol which I could comfortably slip into one of the pockets of the greatcoat. It was manufactured off-world. The gun fired ice slugs, bullets of pure water ice accelerated to supersonic speed by a captive jacket, which was driven down the barrel by a sequenced ripple of magnetic fields. Ice slugs did as much damage as metal or ceramic bullets, but when they shattered into the body,